With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Gary Parrish, she is hosting the GQ show every single day from 4 until 6. Gary is the national college basketball columnist for CBSSports.com. He is a multiple Emmy-winning television personality, rising star in the field of meteorology, which comes in handy to today. Gary, how are you?
Great. You okay?
I'm fabulous. Mike Norvell wrote a letter to the city of Memphis. What'd you think?
I thought it was nice. You know, it's not something he has to do. It's not something everybody would do, but I think it's appropriate. And he was, I think, showed through words his appreciation for the job he had, the university for which he worked, and the city in which he lived, and also broke a bit of news in the process by announcing that he is not going to coach the Tigers in the Cotton Bowl, which, as you know, we talked about yesterday, I figured this would be the way it goes. I know that it must be disappointing on some level to spend most of the season dreaming about coaching Memphis to a conference championship and then competing in the Cotton Bowl against a power conference school that we now know is Penn State. But the truth is, once your circumstances change as drastically as Mike's have changed, you're now the head coach at Florida State with a recruiting period, a signing period on tap. Once he got there, I always assumed no matter what he wanted to do, once he got there and like looked up and took a breath and said, okay, this is my job now, it's just not practical to come back to Memphis and go through practices and spend the next month or a few weeks at least preparing for that when you've got a to-do list that is probably longer than you could imagine right now. And so I'm not surprised. I know it's probably disappointing on some level, but it's also the smart and right thing to do, I believe.
Well, I think the way he put in those letters, too, he literally stands up in front of the players every day, and every coach does this, but this is particularly his message, and, you know, give it everything you have today. Like, it's awfully hard to do that when you're just parachuting in. Like, he had three Florida State decommitments Friday night, right? But before he was hired. And so, with all due respect, you gotta put that Florida State recruiting class together. You gotta hire staff. You gotta do all that stuff. It makes no sense. In fact, when he said on the field, "See you in Dallas, baby," or whatever it was, I immediately tweeted out because I was hearing that he probably wouldn't. And it just makes no sense at all. Now, here's my question: is there? We don't have this in hoops. You have. Nate Oates and people speculating about where he might go when the season is over, but you don't have him on the way to the Sweet 16. You don't have him saying, you know what, my assistant's going to handle Sweet 16 game. I'm out of here. That doesn't happen in hoops because the calendar's different. Can you imagine? I don't think they will ever change it. But wouldn't if they did? Couldn't they say, you can't hire a dude until he's done coaching his last game? If you simply made signing day, moved it into mid-February, maybe had an early signing day in July and August, and then another one in mid-February. Why can't you do that?
Well, first off, I don't think the NCAA has any power
they
to
don't.
Tell a university
that's exactly
who
the problem. Yep.
Who it can hire, when it can hire. You know, that's why Bruce Pearl can have a show cause, but Auburn could hire him when it did, and the NCAA can't do anything about it. They can just put restrictions on Bruce Pearl, but they can't prevent Bruce Pearl from being hired. Same thing with, like, Sean Miller or Bill Self right now. They can send a notice of allegations and threaten harsh penalties and suspend Bill Self and Sean Miller forever. But they cannot make Arizona or Kansas fire their coaches. That is up to Arizona and Kansas. And so the first part is they simply don't have the power to do that. Secondly, I don't believe it's just a calendar problem. I think it's a bowl game problem. I think it's a system problem. The difference between college basketball and college football is that unless you're in the college football playoff, the game you're about to play, we can celebrate it and talk about how great of an achievement it is, because it is a great achievement for Memphis to be in the Cotton Bowl. But it's just an exhibition game that doesn't mean anything. If you win it, you don't advance to anything. If you lose it, it doesn't eliminate you from national championship contention, because you're not in national championship contention. In the NCAA tournament, if you are in it, you theoretically have a chance to do something special, you know, to go to a school's first Final Four or advance to your first Sweet 16 or win a national championship. You are still, even if the odds are totally stacked against you, you are still competing for a championship. 68 teams in college basketball get an opportunity to do that. In college football, only four do. And unless you are one of those four, what we've learned over the years, and especially recently, is that the coaches will bail before the bowl game, and the players with NFL draft hopes will sit unless it is a college football playoff game. Nobody's sitting those. But if you're just going to another bowl, literally any other bowl, it's been deemed just not worth it.
It certainly does. Anyone who wants to criticize players for sitting out bowl games, it certainly does illustrate how meaningless they are if coaches routinely bail. Let me ask you this, though. If there were an 8-team playoff or even a 16-team playoff, either one, and there's some sort of automatic bid for the best group of five team, just like there is, but instead of going to the Cotton Bowl, you get to play LSU, okay? So Memphis is the 8th seed in an 8-team playoff as the highest group of five finisher, gets an automatic shot. Memphis is going to be in a playoff game starting in 2 weeks. There's going to be not this weekend, but next weekend, they're going to be a playoff game against LSU. Would Mike Norvell still be the coach for that?
Yes, I believe so.
even though they're going to get murdered by LSU, and even though I think you're exactly right. He would still coach that. You would have to coach that. Like, you would have to coach that, right?
Yeah, you'd have to. I mean, that would be the equivalent of Nate Oates at Buffalo taking Buffalo to the NCAA tournament and then just saying, you know what, I'm out. I'm going to go to Alabama. I'll let somebody else coach Buffalo in the NCAA tournament. That just does not happen. Now, the calendar is a little different, if we're being honest, because you get into the NCAA tournament, it's announced on a Sunday, and then you play Thursday or Friday. There's a big gap between you know you're in the college football playoff and you actually compete in the college football playoff. But I still think what I said is true. If Memphis were in an 18 playoff right now and getting ready to go to Baton Rouge to play LSU, Mike Norvell would still be the coach, and then Florida State would have to decide what it wants to do.
They wouldn't hire him because they lose the whole signing class. You would have hired someone else. You would not want to be the coach of the group of five team that makes the playoffs if you're planning on popping, because you'd be boxed in and people aren't going to wait for you. Why the hell did they move the signing day till Jeffrey? Why did they create an early December signing day? This is insane.
Originally they did it so that kids could. Oftentimes, like, you were getting a lot of kids late in February that it was basically to say, okay, if you've already decided that you're committed, if you committed well in advance and you know where you're going, you now have a signing day in December so you can get it done with, rather than having re-recruiting going after college football bowl season ended.
So who was behind it? The coaches didn't want to have to hold on to their players this long. Is that what it was? The players who had committed to them?
Correct.
They didn't want... I just want to put these guys in the barn. We got them
exactly.
Locked up.
But then there were a lot of coaches that didn't want that because they thought it moved the recruiting calendar up during the season, during meaningful games.
Well, it does. It makes this thing insane. Gary, what do you think? Don't you think they should move it back to February? I think it's nuts.
I don't think there should be any signing period. I think you should just be allowed to
sign whenever you want.
Commit whenever you want. Like, your son didn't have to. You know, hey, there's this week in December. You better figure out where you want to go to school. Like, your son didn't have to do that.
Sign whenever you want to sign. Why do we have signing periods?
It's all about control. You know, like, I honestly, why do we have letters of intent?
Oh, I get that. Yeah. I totally get why we have. But, like, if a player wants to, if you want to lock someone up, don't you want, if you want control, Don't you want to lock someone up when you get to whenever you can? If you can lock them up in June, lock them up in June. Like, why wouldn't they want that? If you're exactly right. Why sign letters of intent? But if you're going to have letters of intent, let kids sign a letter of intent in June.
Right. I mean, it's not like kids can just be out there signing by themselves. They, you know, a parent or a guardian has to also be involved and sign off on it. And so once a family is comfortable with a decision, even if it's the right decision or the wrong decision, I don't care about that. You know, I'm not involved in making other people's decisions. Once a family is comfortable and says, this is where we want to go and this is what we're going to do, then whether that's in the summer before their senior year or in the winter of their senior year, or frankly, anytime. I don't even care. As long as the university in question is willing to do it and the family of the prospect is willing to do it, I'm for eliminating signing periods completely and just letting people make their decisions whenever they want to make them.
Okay, on to the coaching search. What's your official position on the Ryan Silverfield candidacy?
My official position is that he has a ton of positives working for him. He has incredible relationships, it appears, with the players currently in the locker room. He's got incredible relationships with the prospects. He seems smart. He seems motivated. He seems confident. He seems a lot of the things that you would want the next head coach to be. And Bruce Feldman has just, you know, a few minutes ago tweeted that his candidacy is gaining support because he's got support from current players, former players, and recruits. And he points out, which I think is interesting, especially given what you noted about Florida State having decommitments on last Friday night. At this moment, there's not a single Memphis player in the transfer portal. At this moment, there has not been a single Memphis recruit decommit. And that is largely because of the possibility that Ryan Silverfield will be the next head coach. And so what I would say is, if I'm David Rudd or Laird Veach, I would take all of that into consideration. And I would use that. That's part of his candidacy. Like, you might think somebody else is better independent of everything, but this is not happening in a box, in a vacuum. Like, that, those things, the fact that the idea that he won't lose players, that he won't lose the recruiting class, cannot be taken for granted that if you hire somebody else, it'll remain the same. And so those are all positives that are working for him. Still, I believe that you have to be sure he's the right guy for the job. If you – I don't know Ryan as well as Dr. Rudd knows Ryan, or as well as, in theory, Laird Veach, the athletic director, would know Ryan. So if you think he's not the right guy for the job – but, hey, he can keep the players and keep the recruits, I don't believe that's good enough. You need to be sure that he is capable of doing this job at a high level, or at least you have to convince yourself that he's capable of doing the job. And if you convince yourself that he is and you combine that with all of these other things, then I think Ryan Silverfield should be the next head coach at the University of Memphis. But that is something they've got to figure out. I guess I'd bottom line it this way. It looks good to me from where I'm sitting, but I don't have, I'm not there every day. Just the simple fact that the players like him is not good enough. The players liked Matt Luke. That wasn't good enough. That seemed to me to be a mistake when it happened. And, you know, a few years later, it clearly was. So they need to figure out, is Ryan Silverfield really head coach material for our job right now? But if they deem that he is, and you combine it with the fact that the idea that he's going to be able to keep the players and keep the recruits, then I think it's a home run and should be done ASAP.
I agree with pretty much all of that, honestly. I do think they lost one, because I saw Jonah retweeted someone who had decommitted, but by and large, I think that's true. He's held the – listen, he as I said the other day, he crushed it. Like, it wasn't just that he was colorful, because he wasn't, really. Honestly, he crushed it without being colorful. It's just the level of care that he put into the program and thoughtfulness. He just seemed commanding. He seemed in control. I've decided not to send certain assistants out because we don't want any academic casualties, right? I've been in contact with every member of the recruiting class. I stood up in front of the current team, and we're ready to go forward. I have I got Brady coming back if I come back, basically. He said that. actually, my understanding on that is I don't believe there's really any consideration that Brady is going to go to FSU at this point. I think there is some consideration that he might explore, and some might chortle at this, but the guy has been in school for a long time, and that he might explore seeing what he can do in the NFL, whether he can get on or not, you know, but just moving on. That I think is it may include the NFL. Or he, from his perspective, would hopefully include the NFL. I think that's a bigger threat than necessarily him, Brady, going to Florida State. But for all those reasons, I agree with all of the momentum and everything else. And I also agree that in the end, they have to confirm it. Like, they have to sit down and listen to his plans, see who his OC is going to be, et cetera. You don't just hire him because he's popular. Johnny Jones was popular. Right. And you're exactly right. Matt Luke, he wasn't just popular with the players. Like, he was the Ole Miss choice. You know, like, the Ole Miss fan base wanted Matt Luke. And then what did they do? They didn't go to the games. The Ole Miss fan base didn't go to the games. So I love Brian. And I think I'm glad his candidacy's picking up steam. And I think it had to pick up steam. And I think he did. It picked up steam for all the right reasons, because he made this case for himself in front of Laird Veach. But I think in the end, I'm with you. If in the end they really do think someone else is better, you have to pick the person who's better, which gets me to Barry Odom. I'm not saying he's better, but there also has been support for his candidacy. It would not be popular. I've literally had people text me, they wouldn't hire Barry Odom, would they? Like, I got that text just out of the blue. And I wrote back, yes, they would. And again, I'm not pounding the pavement for Barry Odom. I mean, pounding the drums for Barry Odom. But I think he's a real candidate. What's your official position on the Barry Odom candidacy?
I don't believe it's what I would do, but I do believe it's something they will consider doing. And I don't necessarily think it would be a terrible thing. Like, it might be good. It might even be, if we're pitting them against each other and we're placing Ryan Silverfield on a table and Barry Odom on a table, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Barry Odom wouldn't be the better hire. I don't know. But what I can tell you for sure is that he would not be more popular. Ryan is, there were a few things that I thought were really interesting on Sunday when he held that press conference, is that he showed an incredible amount of self-confidence. Like, he seemed comfortable and he seemed sure of himself, and not in an arrogant way. There are sometimes you see people and they're very sure of themselves, and you look at them and go, I don't know why that guy's so sure of himself. You know, I don't know where that's coming from. I don't even know if it's real. That wasn't what I picked up on with Ryan. He seemed like, when he said more or less, I'm the best guy for this job, that he genuinely believes he's the best guy for this job. And I thought his confidence stood out in an incredibly positive way. The other thing he noted was he actually said this thing that has become a bit of a cliche over the years, which is, if you love Memphis, it'll love you back. He actually used those words. And that, to me, suggested he's very in tune with what Memphians like to hear. And he was playing the hits. And so what that suggests to me is he really gets this place. And so when he says the things that he says and really understands the city the way Mike did, the way John Calipari did, the way Tubby Smith did not, then you set yourself up to be a very popular hire if it happens, because Memphians want people who love Memphis, because Memphis is so often beat down by other people, and he has already started, using the sentences that make it very clear. And I don't mean in an insincere way. I believe it's sincere, but he's made a point to make that point, which will make him a popular hire if it is ever announced, regardless of whether he's ultimately a good hire or not.
Yeah, on all of that, a couple things. There's no question. One of them wins the press conference, one of them loses the press conference, or at least the announcement. You know, Ryan Silverfield is going to be the next coach. Woo! Everyone goes crazy. Barry Odom's going to be the next coach. Boo! Everyone's like, I'm giving up my season tickets forever. I've been a season ticket holder for 43 years. This is the last straw, right? That's the reaction to those two. And in the end, that's not a reason. I actually don't believe that Barry Odom would be a disaster. I think Barry Odom would still be the coach at Missouri if they hadn't changed ADs. And I know people who think he's a total stud And but there's no question one wins the press conference and one doesn't. One keeps the momentum, like to the extent that matters. It's interesting. When Dickey was the interim for Justin, there was never any backlash when he didn't get the job because he was never going to get the job. You now have a situation where an interim, there is incredible support in the team for him to get the job. I think it actually makes it harder if it's not Silverfield to walk in than it was for Mike Norvell to walk in. You know what I mean? Because you're not Ryan Silverfield, and he could have gotten the job. Whereas Mike Norvell didn't have to deal with that. I think I'm not saying that's a reason to make a decision one way or another, but I do think it's an interesting dynamic at play. Finally, I actually really do believe, as you pointed out, Ryan Silverfield really does get Memphis, really does understand Memphis, and really does love Memphis. He has gotten job offers every single year, just like all the other assistants. He's a kind of a different cat, very thoughtful. His wife's a doctor. Her career is almost as important. It's not financially, but it's almost as important as, like, his career. It is as important as a human level, certainly. It's more important because she's saving lives other than Ryan. And he doesn't just want to pop here and there and there. Like, he just doesn't. He is more connected in some ways. Like, he's really embedded in this place. And I'm not saying he would stay here forever. I don't necessarily believe that, although he said that. But I really do believe he is of Memphis in a meaningful way.
I believe all of that as well. I think he, and listen, he's just, first off, he's talking live in front of cameras for one of the, you know, like, he's not used to having all of those cameras pointed at him. And yet he pulled it off, I thought, terrifically. But you can also, like, go a little too far. And I think when he started talking about, this is the job I want. I'm not quoting him word for word, but essentially said it's my destination job. Like, listen, if he won 12 games next season and Nick Saban retired and Alabama called, he'd be the next Alabama coach. I don't care how much he loves Memphis. The college football coaching hierarchy is still set up the way it's set up. But I do believe that he cares about the city, and it is true that if he didn't want to be here right now, he wouldn't be here right now. He has turned down other things to stay at Memphis, and that is something that is not to be dismissed. Again, there's a lot of positives working in his direction, and when you contrast that with at least the idea that there's not, like, another home run hire, then the idea that his candidacy is gaining traction, according to Bruce Feldman, makes some sense to me. I would say Justin Fuente was not considered a home run hire.
Mike Norvell wasn't really. No one had heard of Mike Norvell. He was by those people who knew. Like, Dan Wolken thought he was a great hire, you know. But it wasn't like, oh, we got Mike Norvell.
No, the average Memphis fan, and honestly, the average Memphis media member, and I'll include myself in this, when you hear Justin Fuente is going to be the coach at Memphis, the first thing you do is go, well, let me Google that first.
Right.
And when you hear Mike Norvell is going to be the next head coach at Memphis, you go, well, let me Google this person. And then you go, okay, well, this looks good. You know, I didn't really know who Lincoln Riley was until, you know, I guess I did because he was a star offensive coordinator for a, you know, top five team. But, you know, just because there isn't an obvious other candidate that's a home run hire doesn't mean there's not an obviously better other candidate. But for the purposes of the Memphis fan base, Ryan Silverfield seems to be the most popular option at this time. And when you can, when you consider everything we've discussed, again, I'll just go back to what Bruce Feldman tweeted. It doesn't surprise me that his candidacy is gaining traction.
Just because there's not another obvious home run hire doesn't mean there's not another home run hire, I guess, right?
Ultimately, the goal here should not be to make the Memphis fan base celebrate you on Twitter when you make an announcement. The goal should be to win another conference, hire a coach who is best equipped to allow you to win another conference championship next year, to compete for another New Year's Six Bowl next year, to try to, you know, increase attendance and grow the program year over year. If that is Ryan Silverfield, awesome. But if you are Laird Veach and David Rudd and anybody else who's going to have a voice in this thing, if you believe it's somebody else, let me be clear, and I think you would agree with this. If you genuinely believe that person is somebody else, then the hire needs to be somebody else.
Memphis plays Tennessee. I've kept you too long. Memphis plays Tennessee this week. How good is Tennessee? It's a basketball game, et cetera. Anyone can win, blah, blah, blah. Break it down for me, GP.
Well, I believe Tennessee's got the longest home winning streak in college basketball right now. If it's not the longest, it's certainly near the top. And they're very different than last season. They're missing Grant Williams. They're missing Admiral Schofield. They're missing, you know, their top three scorers from that team that was spent some time ranked number one in the country last season. But they're still 7-1, with the lone loss being a three-point loss on a neutral court to a Florida State team that ranked 15th at KenPom. They're 21st at KenPom, which is roughly 15 places better than Memphis right now. And they will be favored by, I'd imagine, 5, 6, 7 points inside Thompson Bowling Arena.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.